welcome back to the program. The events of September 11th, 2001, would set off a 10-year search for Osama bin Laden. That manhunt would end 2 years ago on May 1st, 2011. In between was one of the greatest detective stories of our time. Only my guest, Peter Bergen, through his exhaustive research, unprecedented interviews with key players, and exclusive access to the Abbottabad compound in which bin Laden lived his final years, has been able to tell the full story. In fact, Bergen was the only outsider to tour the compound before it was destroyed by the Pakistani government. Considered the definitive account of the hunt for bin Laden, his book Manhunt serves as the basis of the documentary by the same name, which debuts tonight on HBO. Peter Bergen is the author of 4 books about bin Laden and al-Qaeda. He is CNN's national security analyst and a director at the New American Foundation. He's held teaching positions at Harvard and Johns Hopkins, and it is my pleasure to welcome Peter Bergen back to this program to talk about Manhunt. Peter Bergen, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for the invitation.
Great to have you here. What is the biggest misconception you think that most people have about the 10-year hunt for bin Laden?
Well, of course, a lot of people's views about how the hunt went down are going to be colored by Zero Dark Thirty, which, you know, millions of Americans went to see, and it's certainly a fine movie. It's a little misleading as a work of history. The female character in the film certainly plays an important role in the hunt for bin Laden, but the film characterizes her as the only person who's really interested in finding bin Laden, which of course flies in the face of the fact that there were literally hundreds of people who were involved in the hunt for bin Laden over the last 20 years, many of whom were profiled in the HBO film Manhunt, particularly some female analysts who played a key role in building the intelligence case against bin Laden in the pre-9/11 era and tracking him later.
To what extent might we have found bin Laden sooner had we not taken our eye off the ball to some extent and not focused as much attention as we did in Iraq?
Well, you know, I document in my book that, you know, certainly Iraq sucked off many of the Arab linguists, many of the top counterterrorism operatives at the agency, and consumed a lot of presidential attention and all the, you know, so certainly Iraq was certainly a distraction. If you do this, you know, if the Iraq War hadn't happened, would we have caught bin Laden any quicker? You know, hard to tell. But certainly, you know, vast amounts of resources were put into Iraq. One of the kind of unexpected outcomes of Iraq, however, was Joint Special Operations Command under the command of General Stanley McChrystal, which really evolved into an exceptional fighting machine in Iraq. And of course, that was the group that implemented the raid that led to bin Laden's death. So, you know, Iraq unexpectedly kind of sharpened the operative abilities of special operations that eventually killed bin Laden. But, you know, that would obviously not be a good reason to have had the Iraq War in the first place.
What do we know about bin Laden's activities now before getting to Abbottabad?
You know, in the paperback version of the book that I just published, I was able to reconstruct more than I was able to in the hardcover because one of bin Laden's wives gave a quite instructive interview to a Pakistani police officer, I was able to obtain that interview. And it really helps build, there were sort of gaps in what bin Laden, where he was before Abbottabad. He moved there in 2005. We now know that he was living in a number of other Pakistani cities in the northwest frontier region of Pakistan. He was really in Pakistan for 9 years. He sort of traveled around a fair amount before he settled in Abbottabad. He also had 4 kids while he was on the run in Pakistan. Most fugitives don't have multiple children while they're on the run. But bin Laden was living with 3 of his wives and a dozen kids and grandkids for much of the time that he was on the run in Pakistan.
What level of security did he believe that he had? And was that sense of security as a result of the fact that he thought he had the protection of the Pakistani military?
There's no evidence that bin Laden has been protected by anybody inside the Pakistani government. Yeah, this is a question I asked multiple people when I was in researching my book. No evidence has surfaced to this. Bin Laden was also paranoid, secretive, and disciplined, and was very careful not to, you know, involve people in, even people within al-Qaeda weren't sure where he was living, you know. So he was being very careful. And what degree of security? I think he felt quite secure because he just, the last thing he expected would, you know, was a U.S. Navy SEAL team raid in the middle of Pakistan in a major Pakistani city. He just, that is you know, he had no plan B. There was no escape plan. There was no secret tunnel, no secret hiding place inside the compound. I think he just felt that this was a kind of, you know, a fairly anonymous Pakistani city. He was, he was off the grid, no internet, no email, no phones. He was taking pretty elaborate precautions, as were his immediate family members. And he just felt that those probably protected him, but they didn't.
How close were we to bin Laden at various points prior to 2 years ago today?
Well, there was only one time when we were close, and that was the Battle of Tora Bora, which took place in December of 2001 in eastern Afghanistan after the fall of the Taliban. And you know, bin Laden was definitely at this battle. Special Forces, official history of the Afghan war, devotes a few pages to the Tora Bora battle. And there were multiple radio interceptions of bin Laden's voice between December 9th and December 14th, 2001, that were pinpointed in some cases to a, you know, within yards of where he was. But the problem was there weren't enough American boots on the ground. Maybe 70 American Special Operations Forces with some British Special Operations Forces. And that was not, you know, Tora Bora is a big area, 30 square miles. It was the middle of winter. It was very rugged territory, and that simply wasn't enough. CIA officers on the ground asked for reinforcements. They did not come. They were turned down in the chain of command at the Pentagon.
One of the things you talk about are the decisions that led up to going into the compound at Abbottabad, and that there were people that were opposed to that. Talk a little bit about that decision-making process.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was a long... The first discussion that Liam Panetta, CIA director, had with President Obama about the possibility that bin Laden was living in this compound was August of 2010. So almost a year went by before the actual operation happened, and there was a big discussion of the various options, and there were different people had different favored courses of action. Some wanted just to wait and get the better intelligence picture, which was never forthcoming. There was never any hard evidence of bin Laden that was living in Abbottabad. It was all sort of circumstantial. And for Secretary of Defense Robert Gates in the final National Security Council meeting on April 28th, when the final decision was kind of being discussed, Secretary Gates repeatedly reminded people that Operation Eagle Claw, the debacle in the Iranian desert when the President Carter ordered an operation to release the hostages held in Iran in 1980, that failed. Gates, who was at that time executive assistant to CIA director Stansfield Turner, in every meeting would bring up this case and say, a lot of things can go wrong with this kind of operation. The case that bin Laden's living in Abbottabad is circumstantial. Similarly, Vice President Biden, in this final National Security Council meeting, voiced his objections to the raid. He felt that, the evidence wasn't there and enough to make this kind of decision. Too many things could go wrong. SEALs taken hostage, killed by Pakistani firefights, civilians killed, an attack on the U.S. embassy in Pakistan. The list went on and on. Concerns about resupplying U.S. troops in Afghanistan if the Pakistanis can close the land routes and air routes into Afghanistan, through which at that time the vast majority of American resupply took place. So, and then on the other side, Liam Panetta's CIA director was always in favor of the raid. So was Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State. So was Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. So, President Obama was getting mixed advice, split advice from his senior national security advisors when he made the decision. And, of course, we know how the decision was made and the outcome. And it's easy post facto to say, well, that was an easy decision when you know what the outcome was. But if all the things that could have gone wrong, which they all, quite aware of, what if bin Laden wasn't there? What if there were multiple civilian casualties? What if SEALs were taken hostage or killed? There were a lot of things, the ways that this thing could go wrong. And even though it went pretty well, still something did go wrong, which was a helicopter crashed. And without having contingency plans for that kind of thing, this whole operation could have folded.
Finally, what is the biggest intelligence takeaway for you from this whole story?
Well, there's a very literal intelligence takeaway, which is the Navy SEALs recovered 6,000 documents of the compound, and many of which have been translated and some of which have been published. And the takeaway from that is, that bin Laden was writing to his associates and well understood that the drone program was decimating his leadership in Pakistan, well understood that the Al-Qaeda brand name was in deep trouble. He was contemplating changing the name of the group, advising other affiliates of Al-Qaeda not to name themselves Al-Qaeda. He was doodling with some very improbable ideas about killing President Obama and General David Petraeus, which are easy to write down as a sort of you know, as blue sky ideas, but how do you implement them is much more hard. So the intelligence takeaway, you know, and this is one of the reasons, by the way, of course, that why the Navy SEAL raid really made a lot of sense, because if you did a B-52 bombing raid, which was one of the ideas, or a drone strike, there was no intelligence collection at the site. And so while the Navy SEAL raid obviously came freighted with the most risk, it also had the most benefit.
Peter Bergen, his book Manhunt is just out in paperback. The HBO documentary premieres this evening. Peter, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Well, thank you very much for the interview. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We'll take a break. I'll be right back.